Hello and welcome to a new edition of the In the Money Players podcast. This is one of our Keeneland special shows, these shorter shows we're doing for Wednesday and Thursday at Keeneland. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, coming back to you from the Brooklyn Bunker. Once again, very happy to be joined by a man whose work a lot of people have been enjoying on the In the Money Plus side over at Keeneland, but he's also been doing an amazing job all season long helping us out with our Kentucky Derby Top 10 videos. Another one of them is going to be dropping a little bit later today. I speak of Eric DeCoster. Eric, how are things?
Things are great. Things are very good. Obviously enjoying Keeneland, and I've been down at Oaklawn Park helping out in their racing office and enjoying that as well. So I'm just 7 days a week all racing, whether it's at the track or handicapping races, working on the top 10 stuff. It's enjoyable. It's what I like to do.
That sounds familiar. How has the gig been at Oaklawn? What do they mostly have you doing?
Oh, you know, just the basic racing office stuff, taking entries, helping out in the afternoons and placing or the paddock or wherever they might need me. But, you know, it's all good. It's all enjoyable. And obviously you get some great racing and very competitive racing. So it's not something you get to be a part of at a lot of tracks. So it's very exciting.
Got a few more weeks at Oaklawn. Do you know what the next stop on your dance card is after that?
I do, yes. I'll be heading up to Prairie Meadows, which is my original home track up in Iowa, and I'll be in their racing office as well as the assistant racing secretary. So,
oh wow,
yes, it's very exciting, and obviously, like I said, I get to kind of return to my roots, full circle moment. So it's even cooler from that regard.
Very cool. We'll have a production meeting outside the show where we'll talk to you about speaking to some folks over there, maybe doing some coverage. Yes. Certainly, we can do it on the plus side. Maybe we can do it on the free side as well. Speaking of great racing, Keeneland is where it's at. We had a very exciting opening weekend, that Tour de Force performance from Sierra Leone, among others. Week two kicks off today. And one of the bets we want to be highlighting are these doubles that take out being reduced from 22% to 15%. The early returns have been good for Keeneland. They've also been great for the horseplay. It really gives us something to market. So on today's show and tomorrow's show, I've got a couple of different approaches to the doubles that I want to talk about. And then, you know, we'll bring you in to talk about your favorite double spot on the day. And the one I want to talk about today is in race number five. But what I'm going to do is, since there's a horse that I really like in race number five, I'm going to try to play some doubles into this horse. In other words, some doubles from race four to race five, and then also some doubles from race five to race six. So we'll start off talking a little bit about this maiden claimer that goes as race number four, these $20,000 maiden claimers going a mile and an eighth. It's an interesting condition for me when you're dealing with cheaper horses running that mile and an eighth. That extra distance can certainly play like more than just a 16th of a mile. And I wanted to try to factor that into the horses that I come up with in here. One of the ones I wanted to use was going to be on a pure pace play basis. The number six, Quiet Rush, is a horse who I do think, I agree with the time form algorithm, will probably be able to get the lead. Second off the layoff, getting back onto dirt after being a flow move up in that Churchill race where he was probably against the flow of the track in November 1st. So the six was one of the numbers I wanted to have on there. Quiet American on the bottom. I'm thinking that horse should be able to stay. But the one from, and you know, I may be making a mistake here, Eric, getting sucked in to betting a horse that's 0 for 14 career-wise. But I was wondering if maybe, just maybe, the breeding for Curlin's In Charge, the three-runner by Curlin out of a Patio Prado dam, wouldn't be able to be the thing that finally brought this horse to the winner's circle. A new arrival, a relatively new arrival in the Asmussen Bard, was only cut three races ago. So I figure maybe that 0 for 14, maybe the horse is a little bit better than that number suggests. I was going to try those two before we get to the horse that we're talking about, the sequence, because of in race five. But what numbers I can get this technique for playing the doubles, the sort of in and out, and especially if I'm only playing one in race five, I can definitely get spreadier here. Who did you like in race four? Who might be worth throwing in? Or is it just a race that you didn't want to touch with a 10-foot pole?
I'm not confident on it. There were a few names that intrigued me. One of them was the three Curlins in charge. Like you mentioned, the pedigree is all there for it. And you get the switch to Dirk for the first time, or the second time, I should say, in the career. But it's been a long while. And that that should move this horse up a bit, in my opinion. It's not like it's not there. He clearly has some ability. He just doesn't know how to fully put it on the racetrack. And I'm sure kind of switching his mind around is going to do wonders for him, especially in the barn that he's in. Even if Steve Asmussen doesn't really have him fully cranked at Keeneland, at least that's how the numbers reflect. But when he has the right spot, like this horse might be in, he's got a chance. The one other horse maybe might be the one, Money Memolo, purely on a distance angle, because he sprinted first time out, flew home, got claimed from there, and then just kind of grinded out a third place finish at Turfway. That suggested he might just want a little further. And once again, I don't think the dirt switch to dirt is going to do any bad for him. So those are two names that I found interesting, but not very confident. It's a weird bunch.
I'm going to take a shot against the 12 top of the street. And this is the kind of horse where in another type of gimmick, maybe I would use. But in a double where if race four goes wrong and I'm restarting doubles in race number five, it's just not that big a deal to me to try to get what I think would probably be one of the more underlaid combinations with this horse, who I feel like has just had his chances. Honestly, if there was only one double I was looking to play all day, and not trying to play professionally at this point in my life. Life isn't all about just eking out every bit of EV. If it was the only thing I was interested in, I probably wouldn't want to lose to this horse just based on the numbers. But the way that I'm playing this race, I don't need to touch the 12, because if it goes wrong, we'll just come back in race number five with the horse that I'm interested in this starter allowance for fillies and mares four and up going six furlongs. That's the number seven, Forever Home. There's a few different angles that I like about this horse. One is the speed. One is the fact that this horse, I think, might benefit from going from being inside and going and now going outside. Oaklawn's track has had a few different, you know this better than me, but a few different profiles this meet. There's been times when the rail's been good. I didn't think those days, March 2nd and even the February 18th day, that was necessarily the case. This horse seemed to get a little bit buried down on the inside to me in both of those spots. And then there's also an angle with the barn, with the Garcia barn, that was not going particularly well for this horse's most recent runs at Oaklawn and has been picking up. It's not like you're talking about white hot or anything, but going into Formulator and looking recently, second at 6-1, second at 6-1, second at 4-1, second at 14-1, a win at 5-1. And then the two horses that didn't run well were both massive prices. So what I'll use that as sometimes is a proxy for the barn just heating up. You know, when a barn wins three in a row and everybody sees they're heating up, there's zero equity in that. But when you can find sort of subtler things of just horses outrunning their odds, that's when I think you can really sometimes use that information to your advantage. Anyway, I'll put it all in the hopper. Forever Home, the horse that I'm most interested in messing around with in the doubles today. Let's bring you in, Eric, for your thoughts on this one. We talked off air and it sounded like you didn't think I was too out to lunch coming up with Forever Home in this spot.
Not at all, because you need to avoid that last race. She got chewed up. She was the most inside speed and just went at it really hard, and it allowed for some other horses to take full advantage. The winner of that race, Birdie's Cause, was not very close at all in these opening stages. But before that, she'd been consistent against tougher, I might add. Those two races before, she ran good numbers against horses that are really much better than her and have continued to improve throughout the meet, at least those that have run back. So there's old form to go on with wins even before that. And like you said, the barn is just improving. It's been very hit or miss for Gennaro Garcia down at Oaklawn. And I think that he's just kind of been a little bit more smooth sailing this last week or two. So I think you're definitely looking at the right things there. The other horse I thought was interesting, also from a pace perspective, is the one, Goshen. She's going to have to show her hand from the inside draw. She wants to be on the lead regardless, but it's going to take Tyler Gaffalione to really get after her. But she drops from some tough spots, and she's just kind of back with her friends ever so slightly. And I think that'll do her wonders. You know, the last time she was in for a tag at this low was back in November for 16, and she rolled. You know, two starts before that, she was in for 10. Sure, it was at Belterra, but she ran an incredible race to be second. And the winner of that race has gone on to do better things in Kentucky as well. So there's good form here and there. Better start puts her in the game. Plus, you get Tyler Gaffalione, which never hurts in my eyes. So I think if you have the one and the seven, I think you should feel kind of confident going forward.
Yeah, I mean, they're both the same running style. Is the only thing that would concern me in the least is the idea of them maybe dueling. I was hoping Forever Home from the outside draw could get the best of it. But if I had your opinion, I'm not going to do this because I'm going to stand alone with Forever Home. If there was a way to work in, you know, maybe one ticket with a horse like Proto Magic, who I think will pretty likely, I mean, I'm not sure about, horse does seem better on synthetic, but probably the best closer in the spot. Sometimes when I like two speed horses, I will almost automatically throw in at least one combination with a horse I think is going to be the best closer, just in case they knock heads. It's a little bit of insanity insurance for me. Do you respect that approach at all?
Oh, absolutely. My hope I totally get what you're saying. My hope is they take care of each other, because Forever Home can be an effective presser. Outside of horses, so that's my hope. You never know, but you're right. You that insurance is always helpful, especially in spots where you're really looking to cash. And I do agree that Proto Magic would be the best, even though those numbers are best on synthetic. That's kind of the reason I stayed away from her. But yeah, she has some good class. That last race she came out of at Turfway was tough. Didn't have the easiest trip, and still was only beaten a half length for the money.
No, I get it. But I hope you're right. Maybe they could just back it down, and we're looking at a two-speed number there, hopefully, with my seven runner on top. I'll also play some doubles coming out, whether or not I'm alive or not, going into race number five. And it's funny, because when I first looked, and oh, we should note that there's some world in which this will come off the turf, right? Because there has been rain in the area down there. Do you have any, I didn't even check Twitter this morning, any intel on course condition and what surface we think the six is going to go on?
I don't want to say yes or no either way. I do know there was weather, but in the past, obviously following this meet, it hasn't been bad enough, the amount they've gotten, to take it off, and it is supposed to be dry before and then start again later. So okay, it's truly one of those right between hit or miss situations. I would wager it could come off.
Gotcha. I mean, we such a short meet, it would be wonderful it stayed on. In the event it comes off, you know, that would bring a runner like the 16 Dissolved into the mix in a very big way. Assuming on turf, I think my first reading of the race, I wanted to try to find reasons to beat Battle of Normandy. Tricky post, not a huge figure advantage, and the idea that this race could be a little bit sharp, but there's enough pace in here that I think his stamina could come into play. And I think he simply might be the best horse. So it's a little tricky. I'll ask you, where do you stand? Are you with or against Battle of Normandy in this spot?
I would lean more against than with. I think that the class is there, but is the heart there? Is the real question. He's had his opportunities, and he was even money or less two starts, or I should say a year ago in back-to-back starts, and could not get the job done against horses that if you want to win this race, you need to have also won. So yeah, it's not a great look.
Yeah, that's fair. Maybe it's a case of first thought, best thought. I kept trying to get enthusiastic about beating him. And then I just kept coming back to him in terms of potential alternatives. I mean, Mischievous Angel is interesting for the Parklands Thoroughbred team, coming off a long layoff, but he flashed plenty of talent with being in the hunt at the pace call in the Hall of Fame last out, and then the nice win at Belmont. That was also, you know, the Hall of Fame was a pretty decent running. If this horse has improved, and Abreu, somebody who we've seen continue to sort of follow the Chad Brown trajectory with a lot of these horses. That's a horse. The most interesting thing to me is the right blend, presumably, of early speed and finish to be able to make the trip and the mile should suit. That's another place to potentially go. Who did you like in here if I pressed you for an opinion?
I thought the 11 Alexis Zorba made some decent sense if it stays on the grass, which we're assuming at the moment. he has a lot of good speed. I don't love where he's drawn, but I don't know how much else is inside of him. You know, it could be Mischievous Angel. He's a tough freak since he doesn't have enough form to go on it. But everyone else, it's, you know, they'll be on top if they want to be, but they don't need to be. And he likes to go to the front. He'll be sending under IRAD. So I do like that. I think he's really moved up since joining the Mike Maker barn. Obviously these last two runs at Gulfstream have been pretty sharp. He's a horse I just go back on, and I think of all those beats where he looked so great on paper as a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old in other barns, and you kind of get sour on those types, but he just has gone the right way, it seems. So he'd be one to look at, but there's a reason I went into my double that we'll talk about in a second and did not use this one. Instead, used the horse I loved in the first half.
All right, great. Well, one other I'll mention in here quickly is Porcaroles, who I think was, you know, a nice winner on debut at a big price for the Motion Velasquez team. Difficult post, but I'm hoping maybe one where the difficult post just leads to a little bit of an overlay in price. Not exactly sure what kind of trip this horse is going to get. I'd like to think coming from farther back, just looking at pace figures, but I like the early speed and I like the finish. I mean, so really with the 12 and the 9 here, just one of those things where I think they might have the right kind of weapons to succeed in a task like this, even with a potentially tricky post. Let's get to your double on the day here, Eric. Where do you want to begin?
In this first level allowance for straight 3-year-olds, I really don't see how Heartened, barring a bad trip, I think that he's a clear standout in here, and I'm happy to roll with him alone into the second leg, which on turf, tricky, but I think that because it's tricky, there's going to be plenty of opportunity in that second leg. So as long as we can get through the first one, you might spend a little more to cover your bases in the nightcap, but you'll be looking pretty decent and looking at some better pays. Heartened comes off a good run in that Tampa Bay Derby, which, as we know, was a weird race in many ways, but also just had no pace to it. Yep. And he was only beaten 2.25 lengths for the money, ran a credible race, and stuck in there with horses who did come back to do some decent things. You know, obviously the top two, we decided to wait till the Derby, but the third place finisher, Grandmo the First, ran as good of a race as he could in Gulfstream, given the circumstances of the Florida Derby. And then Heartened, two back, broke his maiden so nicely that I just think it, even if the figure wasn't as strong as some of the others, the quality of the competition and what he looked like doing it outstood horses maybe like Native Land, who I know he comes from Oakland. I got to root for him in some sense, but I don't think we run a lot of maiden races here. And I think it's important to note that some of them cycle really well and some of them have the best horses, and others cycle out poorly, and it's the 3-year-olds that you'll see dropping in their next start. And I know the figure was good, but I just don't think those are the quality of horses that fit in a race like this. You know, we'll see. Unfortunately, a few of the horses that he beat last time out do hit a maiden special weight this upcoming weekend at Oaklawn, but it's not in time for us to figure out how good of a race it really was. So I think he's going to be in the eyes of a lot of people, but I know that Heartened, even though he might be a little weaker on recent numbers, does have a little better class to him.
I agree. And those slow paces in both the last two probably contribute a little bit to those final numbers not being as strong. But what I really like about Heartened is clearly against the flow. I mean, we have talked ad nauseum about how slow the pace of that Tampa Bay Derby was, and that's confirmed by hand timing. It was so slow, I was like, the clock must be wrong. And no, it was not. And here's a horse coming from 7th, you know, of 10 there, closing into the slow pace, and now should have plenty of pace to run into in this spot. So, yeah, we'll row in together with Heartened there in race number 7. And let's talk a little bit about your spread in this allowance race, and feel free to look at it both ways. That's I should specify that the race we were just talking about was race 7 with Heartened as the 3-runner, and then race 8 scheduled as of now for the turf going a mile and a 16th, allowance types, you know, giant full field once again. Name check a few, or number check a few at least, Eric, that you're interested in here.
Absolutely. If we're on the grass, which is the hope, because I feel a little better about it, I want the 1 Reckoning Force, the 2 Greek Order, the 3 Deer District, and then all the way outside the 12 Balloony for Chad Brown and Tyler Gaffalione. to be honest, the horse I'm most intrigued by is Deer District. He's low, you know, I handicapped the race without having the morning line in front of me and went back and looked, and it's a little lower than I expected, but I still think the notion stands that this is the right spot for him. He's been consistent, classy, he's tried a little bit of everything, and it's all worked. So I think this is the right spot to maybe get back to the winner's circle. But then you do have the two Greek Order, who has some really strong form over in Europe, ran in a not the toughest race, of course, but some high handicap, low state quality horses in November, and now switches into the U.S. for Belmont and adds IRAD. So plenty of positive angles there. And then the one reckoning force is the price in this race that I love, because he adds blinkers again. I really can't figure out why they would have come off last time out, especially off a win. You know, I don't train race horses, so I don't know, but sometimes they don't even let you do that. So I was surprised to see that, but he had a trip that just did not work for him that day. And now he gets back to a track that he won at two back. So, and then the 12 is just a class coverage really more than anything. Cause you know, Chad Brown beats me when usually I don't expect him to. So I'm going to have him on my side if we're on the grass here.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad idea when you're playing a bet like the double. It's much easier to throw in extra horses, especially ones that you think are going to be prices. That gets prohibitive when you're dealing with the longer pick bets, but it's another reason why the double's great and underrated. Balloony also, you know, ran all right. First time as a gelding back in 39 days. You'll often see his horses step up. You know, that might have been sort of a means to an end, that race. I wouldn't be surprised to see Balloony run a lot better. And hopefully the post gives you a little bit of juice in that price. Yeah, this was a race I had four, basically four on the short list, and they were all the bad horses. So I wouldn't have talked about it on my own. But just for argument's sake, yeah, I think Greek Order's form is pretty good. I like, again, another horse with a good combination of speed and stamina in the form of Deer District. The only one you didn't mention that I think I'll at least throw out there for discussion, Pipeline, I think is a little bit interesting in this spot potentially, especially if able to get loose. You didn't include that one in your reckoning. What were your concerns about Pipeline?
I do have a fear he could step out and maybe steal it. I really wonder. He wasn't beaten far, and the figure came back good, but the fight in this horse has just not been what it was 2 years ago when he was running against some really tough horses and really throwing it down with them. So I just don't know if he's the same horse he once was, even though numbers might indicate otherwise. I think it's just more who he's been up against than what he's actually been putting out, but he will have the chance to control. I could see some riders looking at it on paper, especially the 9 Not Normal and the 10 Noises Off. They are horses who have been versatile in how they run, and especially Not Normal stretching out from the two sprints now back to a route. I could see them really trying to apply pressure to make sure this one doesn't step away, and then
great point.
Things going haywire. And as we know, Keeneland in general, that turf course, it doesn't always play kindly with that long stretch to those horses up front.
All right. Good stuff, my friend. Let's leave it there for this Wednesday card. We're going to put you in for double duty and have you back Thursday also for much more from Eric on the weekends at Keeneland. You're going to want to check out his diaries, his daily write-ups of the card in themoneypodcast.com/plus, the place to go to check that out. Eric, let's do this again pretty much right away. What do you think?
Love it. Let's do it.
All right. We'll be back with a show a little bit later for Thursday. Till then, may you win all your photos.